This is United Tribes News Radio. Insights into Native culture, people, ideas, topics to improve understanding from United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck. In this special edition of United Tribes News Radio, the honoring of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. United Tribes Technical College is one of the institutions and organizations in the state that consistently promotes the holiday dedicated to the civil rights movement leader. In this program, United Tribes Technical College Diversity Committee hosts a Day of Remembering Martin Luther King Jr., which consists of essay contest winners, a video recording of King's I Have a Dream speech, a brief history of the holiday's beginnings in North Dakota, and an introduction of a married couple who work for a global organization of peacekeepers who have been successfully keeping the peace in situations of violent conflict all over the world. This is their second visit to North Dakota.
Welcome this afternoon to the United Tribes Technical College as we honor and celebrate the message of Martin Luther King Jr. And as we begin the rest of the activities, I'd like to welcome President Dr. Leander Russ McDonald.
I only have about a 20 pager here. Ame dakapi, kama korapi, chante weste you are not bad to use but I want to welcome all our friends and relatives here. I shake all your hands with a good heart today. We want to welcome you to this event and welcome you to our campus, those that are not with us and are as students or as employees. We're pleased to have you all here to be with us. That translates to all my relatives. We're all related or everything is related. And this is usually said at the end of a prayer and it's kind of understood that all things are related. So not just as human beings, but also our relationship with the Uchimaka, our grandmother Earth, and also the other living beings that are on the Earth. So, and I believe that Martin Luther King Jr. realized this in his spiritual walk, and especially in his "I Have a Dream" speech, which we're going to hear today. I think we need to take notice of that and remember that, and continue in line with our cultures, that we need to treat each other with respect and recognize one another as human beings for our character, for who we are as human beings and not the color of our skin. How we carry ourselves. I think a lot of us grew up, our uncles are as men, where we end up being uncles, we end up being dads, grandpas, brothers, nephews, but those uncles are kind of the ones that are responsible for teaching us. At least when I was growing up, they'd come and slap you behind the head if I was talking back to my mom or something like that, or my dad, and kind of straighten me out. And then that was happening when I was a little kid. Then, and as I got older, then that relationship changed, and they started treating me as a man instead, and our conversations were different. So we see those things in regard to our culture and the understanding and our values and how we treat each other. And if we really look at our culture in regard to our spirituality, or if you look at the Bible, for those that are Christians, and if you look at the spiritual nature of that, is that in all cases we treat each other how we want to be treated. And I think we need to recognize that. I did shared a little bit last year, and what happened before the event, I did a Google search, and in a Google search I came across this citation and shared a little bit, and I want to bring that back this year and share this with you. Dr. King wrote a book in 1963, and it says, Why We Can't Wait. And King strongly condemned the historic injustices inflicted on Native people. And in there, he wrote the following, and I quote from the book. So, our nation was born in genocide when it embraced the doctrine that the original American, the Indian, was an inferior race. Even before there were large numbers of Negroes on our shores, the scar of racial hatred had already disfigured colonial society. From the 16th century forward, blood flowed in battles of racial supremacy. We are perhaps the only nation which tried as a matter of national policy to wipe out its indigenous population. Moreover, we elevated that tragic experience into a noble crusade. Indeed, even today, we have not permitted ourselves to reject or feel remorse for this shameful episode. Our literature, our films, our drama, our folklore all exalt it. So Dr. King recognized the atrocities that occurred for the Native people, and he experienced atrocities of the African-American people for his time. We must continue to use this ideology that he brought forth in regard to peaceful and prayerful protests. And we see that happening not just too long ago here, and it's still happening today, putting down a Standing Rock. So I think we have to learn from these lessons, and as we move forward and take those understandings with us and take those lessons that I learned and move into the future. And I think the discussion today and what's shared today with our visitors and with those that are putting this event on, that we can have that discussion here. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being a part of this. And oh, I should do it.
Thank you, Dr. McDonald. We'd like to have everybody be able to have a seat. The next part of our agenda will be to share the video so we can direct your attention there. So this is Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech.
50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check. Yeah! A check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content, we'll have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied As long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one, we can never be satisfied. As long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution. And staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is a faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Principal Azure, would you like to join me up here? As part of our activity today, we asked the Theodore Jamerson Elementary students and some college students in composition class to write an essay regarding their thoughts on how the message sent by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. ties into who we are today as Indigenous people. So we have some winners today that we would like to present with certificates and gift cards in the amount of $25. So I will let Principal Azure announce the elementary school students.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our annual presentation on Martin Luther King Day. This year we try to do something a little bit different for our children as to how it relates to them. And through the committee, we came up with let's write an essay as to what it means to them for Martin Luther King's speech. So to put it out there and to get participation, we attached a prize to it. We had all the kids write an essay, and then there was a committee that selected the three, one winner from each class, and we did it in the 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. 5th grade winner was Brandon Cook. Come on down, Brandon. Sixth grade winner was Tashawn White Lightning. And the seventh grade winner was Samira Sanchez. So there you are, our winners. Thank you very much to all the children, those grades, for participating. They did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Principal Azure. We also had some participation at the college level, and the contest winner will be presented by Dr. Brian Pelichek.
Thank you. The question we asked was, what does Martin Luther King's message mean to us today? And all sorts of people submitted different kinds of writings, essays, letters, poetry, songs. And the winner is Marlasia Cloud. So come on down, Marlasia. Let's give her a hand. Congratulations. Now, let's get to know Marlasia just a little bit. Why don't you come over here to the mic? And here's a question for you. Tell us where you're from and what your major area is and what your plans are for the future.
Kind of nervous.
I'm from Billings, Montana. I'm Crow. I'm just doing my general education for now because I don't really know what I want to do yet. So it's my first semester of college ever, and I've always liked Martin Luther King and poetry, so thought I'd try it out, and I won, so.
When you say this is your first, you started in January or back in August? In January. Okay. Marlasia wrote a poem, and she's going to read it to us, and I might have one more question for you.
Everyone knows the dream of Mr. King. He did much more than just let freedom ring. He gave the silence a voice when they felt there was no chance. Changed the lives of millions the day he took a stance. Fought for equality when he knew it was dangerous. Right? Taught us to never let the opinions of others change us. Nonviolent ways of protesting, he wanted nothing but equal rights. To prove to the world the coloreds are no different than the whites. Without him, the world would be a different place. We can now have hopes and dreams despite our different race. He took the weight on his shoulders of 10 million slaves who never got the chance to live to see the better days. Every person in this world deserves generosity and to be treated fair, no matter how blue the eyes or curly the hair. Unfortunately, he'll never know how many people he affected, how many children are no longer abused and neglected. Assassinated at the young age of 39, I thank you for changing so many lives, including mine. Without your intelligence, bravery, and perseverance, we could still be getting judged on our appearance. We could still be screaming at the top of our lungs, but no one would hear it. So today, as we celebrate the day dedicated to you, we will never forget the trials you went through, how you boycotted the buses and saved us from our injustice. We thank you that our nation is no longer corrupted.
Here's a question for you, Marlasia. What was the idea that got you started with this particular piece?
Probably just I've always kind of been a writer. I like to write my own music and lyrics, and I always really liked Martin Luther King. You know, I'm a big supporter of everyone being treated equal, so it just kind of came really naturally.
Thank you. Let's give her another hand. Thank you, Marlasia.
The committee has a gift for you as well. On behalf of the United Tribes Diversity Committee, we are presenting Marlasia with a $25 gift card. Congratulations, Marlasia. Now that we put those students on the spot, I'd like to welcome, and it with great pleasure, and it is such an honor, to welcome Dr. Brian Pelichek, who will share with us how Martin Luther King Day became so significant to the United Tribes Technical College campus, and then he will transition into our honored keynote guests. So welcome, Dr. Pelichek.
Thanks again, Anne Jeanette. I forgot to thank all those people who wrote poems and other submissions. So thank you to all of those people for participating. And we had to make a decision there. And Marlasia was our winner. But there are other interesting things as well. I love holidays. I love this day. Martin Luther King Day on Monday. Martin Luther King Week. Martin Luther King Weekend. Let's talk a little bit about holidays. There are several days on our calendar that are considered official federal holidays, meaning they were created by the government of the United States of America as a special way to live our lives through the year. And I think it's really amazing that the year begins with New Year's Day, which is actually an official holiday. And that gets us going with this new life, new year. We all made resolutions. We are hoping things would get even more interesting than in the past. And then the first really big holiday of the year is Martin Luther King's birthday. So we start the year with this day. The only problem is we just came through the holiday season of November and December, and we were just tired of it all, you know, and then we had all the lights and the pretty trees and all those exciting things, and then we shut off all the lights, we throw our Christmas tree away, and it's the coldest, most terrible month of the year. But this is the way we in North Dakota start our year. And the one beautiful bright spot in January is Martin Luther King's birthday. Now, this holiday became an official legal holiday in 1986. So it's only 31 years old. But the Congress had to vote, say, should we make this into a special holiday? And they voted yes. And the President of the United States, who was Ronald Reagan, signed it and said, yes, the third Monday of January will be a day to honor this person and the people he worked with and the way he worked for civil rights, social justice, peace, and for economic justice. And he used the technique of nonviolence. He tried, you know, when you're working for justice, it's always hard to try to hold yourself back from the anger and the bitterness. I know that. I've lived that. And yet, Martin Luther King tried to teach us to try to keep serene, try to keep a loving, compassionate heart if you can. And I think he was pretty successful at that. There are other holidays in the year, and I just want you to think for just a moment how you celebrate these days. The next day in the calendar is Washington's birthday. We call it now President's Day. And you think to yourself, do you celebrate President's Day? It's possible, if you just think about it, I don't know what if you did anything. Maybe you went shopping someplace or something. There may be something at the school, at Theodore Jamerson. Maybe you did something on President's Day. But just think about it. You don't celebrate really every day, every holiday that comes along, because you're not maybe sure how to do it. What should you do on President's Day? Maybe you have a picture of George Washington up or different presidents and things like that. Then another holiday is in May, Memorial Day. Now, the purpose of Memorial Day was to honor the soldiers that were killed in America's wars. It started out as a day to honor those people from the North who fought in the Civil War and died. And eventually, people said, yes, the people who are from the South also died. But since then, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed in our wars. And that was the reason for Memorial Day, actually. You probably did something on that day. Maybe there was a parade someplace or something, you know? Or maybe you had a special dinner or a picnic or something. Another big one, July 4th, Independence Day. The day that this country was actually born, United States of America. Everybody in this room, you know there's a 4th of July. And you know what you're supposed to do on that day. You are going to find a firecracker, or you're going to find a bottle rocket. You are going to observe this day, and you know what it's about. The birth of your country, even though it might not be clear what happened exactly, how that happened, you know what it's for. And it's a special kind of day. You might go up to the Capitol and there's a special concert. Maybe your family had a picnic that day, or that you went on a boat ride out on the river or on a lake or something. But most people in America celebrate the 4th of July in some way. even if you kind of passed by George Washington's birthday, you know? There are other days too. Labor Day comes in September. You think to yourself, did you celebrate Labor Day this last year? And you think, well, maybe not. Did you or didn't you? You can think. Then Veterans Day, November 11th. It's a day when we honor all those people who have served in our armed forces. And boy, out here at United Tribes, we pay attention to that day, November 11th. We'll do something. We'll have special rituals and parades and programs, a special meal, all things like that. Later in November, Thanksgiving. Now that's a day that most people participate in, and you think to yourself, what are you supposed to do on Thanksgiving? I'd say the number one thing you're supposed to do is eat. I like to eat, it's a wonderful thing. And you know, and there's a certain menu. You know what we eat on that day? Turkey, sweet potatoes, pumpkin pie, cranberries. That's what we eat. And most of the people, I bet just about every one of you participated in Thanksgiving in some way. Something, even if you ate just a piece of pumpkin pie. You knew what it was for, and people think about it. Now, one thing that's special about that day, it's the one day on the calendar when the whole country tries to think a little bit about the relationship between the people of this country and all of the Native American people who live here. That's one of the messages there. And when we think, well, what happened on that first Thanksgiving 400 years ago? Did they eat pumpkin pie? What happened, really? We think about it. You thought about it. So we think about these things. The reason I think about this so much is when we created this holiday in 1986, each governor appointed a committee to encourage people to celebrate this day. And that was created by our governor at that time, George Sinner, and it was called the North Dakota Martin Luther King Holiday Commission. I was on that committee. Our president here at the college, David Giff, was on that committee. And we would meet and we would talk about encouraging people to participate in some way. The biggest problem was people weren't sure, well, what should you do? On Valentine's, you send a card to someone, or you give them a little heart that says, kiss me, or something like that, you know? That's what you do. On Thanksgiving, you eat pumpkin pie. On 4th of July, you think about the birth of the country, and you shoot off a firework. It's exciting. It's important. So all the time, we're exploring, what should you do on this day, or on this weekend, or this week? One of the things we do, we watch that speech. At United Tribes, we have special speakers. We have contests. But you can also meet with your friends, your family. You might decide to watch a movie. Say, maybe you're going to watch Selma this weekend. You know the movie Selma? Have any of you seen that? I see some. You've seen that, right? Maybe you'll watch it with your friend or something. There are a lot of different ways. Have a special party. Go out. Give somebody a gift. Do something with this day. So that was always one of the big challenges. When this holiday started in 1986, Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States. Today, our president is Barack Obama. In a few days, we will have a new president. And we are getting ready for how our lives will change because of this, because our history keeps going, keeps on changing. And here, this day will be here, and Martin Luther King's message will still be with us. And that inspiration, who knows what's coming next in there. So that's my little message on the history of the day. And I want to now introduce our special speakers. Come on down, Tiago and Mart. Let's give these people a hand and I'll tell you who they are. As I said before, Martin Luther King's message had a lot to do with peace and social justice and reconciliation, getting to know people and love people, and to use nonviolence as a way of accomplishing that. And our two guests today are with an organization called, just listen to this title, the Nonviolent Peace Force. Nonviolent Peace Force, right? Yes. And we're going to learn about what they do, why they're here, and how they do that work of Nonviolent Peace Force as we celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday, right? And we have one mic, and I'm going to kind of pass it around, but I'm going to kind of try to control things so they don't just run off with this mic. So, first of all, I'm going to tell you their names. This is Marta Hernandez. Let's give her a welcome. Welcome, Marta. Let's say that. Welcome, Marta. All right. And this is Tiago Wolfer. Let's give him a welcome, too. Say, welcome, Tiago. I bet you haven't met many Tiagos in your life, have you? Well, see, right? This is new, probably. Okay. Now, Marta's from Colombia in South America, and Tiago is from Brazil. And I'm going to start with you, Marta, and you can tell us about the Nonviolent Peace Force a little bit, you know, what it is, and then we're going to find out what you're doing here, and we'll have a few questions from people, and a little bit about your lives as well. So I'm going to start with Marta. I'm going to take the chance of putting this in Marta's hands.
Thank you very much. So thank you, Brian, for the invitation. So, well, yes, I'm from Colombia. So I think I'm going to start just to tell a little bit about me. I'm from Colombia. My major is on cultural studies. I did later on a master's on peace and conflict transformation. I've been with Nonviolent Peace Force since 2007. Okay, and then we've been working in different parts of the world, in Sri Lanka and recently in South Sudan and Philippines. So one of the reasons why I joined Nonviolent Peace Force was MP tries to support the local peace initiatives. There are different strategies, but one of the concrete activities is support local peace initiatives. And I personally really believe in that. Because I'm from Colombia, and Colombia has been in a war for the last 50 years. And I see in my country that civil society has the power to transform conflict. And I do believe in that, because that's sustainable, and that shows that people are able to solve their own problems. So when I joined Nonviolent Peace Force, I was really inspired by the methodology that MP uses to do that. And that is called unarmed civilian protection, which is a methodology that has different strategies, and all of them are based on nonviolence. So what MP tries to do is to go to different places where there is a conflict, sometimes armed conflict, and try to protect civilians and support the local peace initiatives for people to solve their own problem. So I'm very happy to be here sharing this with you. So I'm going to pass now to Tiago, and then he can tell you a bit more about this.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brian, for inviting us. We're really happy to be here. It's been almost a month that we're here in Bismarck, and we've been talking to a lot of people. And it's really interesting that a lot of people are seeing the current context as an opportunity to discuss some issues that were just under the surface and now they're emergency. They're emerging on the light of the conflict related to the pipeline. So we've been really grateful that the community has welcomed us and accepted our role here. And as Marta was saying, NP tries to, we don't come here with a solution. We try to open the space for people to sort out their own issues, you know, because otherwise it's not sustainable if you come here and you give solutions to the people involved in the conflict, no? So just some introductions about me. I'm Brazilian. I was born in Rio, and I started to be interested in conflicts. All you guys know that Brazil is a very violent country, but at the same time, our last war was like 300 years ago. We have 10 neighbors and not a single issue, any border issue, nothing with none of them. But it's a very violent society, you know? So, I mean, I wanted to understand this relationship. That's why I got involved in conflict studies. And also in 2007, I started to work with Nonviolent Peace Force, initially in Guatemala, and then I also went to Sri Lanka, South Sudan, and the Philippines, you know? So I've been working there for almost 10 years. Of course, the context here is completely different. This is new ground for the organization. Of course, you cannot compare the civil war in South Sudan with some issues of violence here. Nevertheless, I think every society has some issues, and it's really, really important for us to tackle those issues from a nonviolent perspective. No, so that's why this day is so important, because nonviolence is a very powerful tool. It's not because we are idealists or anything like that. It is simply because it is effective. It is sustainable. You know, if you deal with conflict in a violent way, you're going to be just trapped in this cycle of violence. You're never getting out of that. You know? So I think that's why we need to see conflict as an opportunity as well, to deal with that in a very constructive way, in a non-violent way, and see it as an opportunity to just improve relationships that have been deteriorated.
Thank you. Can you tell us some of the stories of things you've experienced? Like you mentioned Guatemala, Sri Lanka, Sudan, Philippines, I think. Can you choose one of those, like maybe the Sudan thing, just to, how you, what you did. Sudan is a country in Africa, and I think we have no idea what you were doing when you were there. What did you do, and how did it work?
Well, it's actually quite complex reality, so we'll choose just some few examples. So South Sudan has been in war during the last years, so, and the levels of violence are really high. So what the MP tries to do there is to protect civilians. There is a lot of active fighting in South Sudan. So what the MP does is to think about strategies to immediately protect civilians. So one clear example that I would like to share is at a scenario where there is an IDP camp. And this IDP camp is right in the middle, or was at some point right in the middle between front lines. So on one side you have the government forces, and on the other side you have the opposition forces. So most of the people who were inside this IDP camp were women, okay? And in a society like South Sudan, women have a very crucial role to feed their families, to cook for them, okay? So when you are in a conflict zone, of course, you don't have many choices, right? And then there was very little food for these families. So these women had to take the risk to leave the camp and try to find firewood, okay? So they will be able to take the firewood back to the camp and cook inside the camp, okay? One of the problems was that these women, when they were going out, they were attacked by soldiers. Sometimes it was soldiers by the government, sometimes from the government side, sometimes those soldiers were from the opposition side. So these women were attacked, were beaten, sometimes the little food they had was taken. So there was a lot of harassment against these women. So when MP, with the support of the national staff, they identified that need, was important to start talking to these women and think about strategies, how to prevent the attacks against them, so that they will be able to go find firewood and then come back, but without being attacked by soldiers, by armed forces. So these women came up with some ideas. They say, okay, we are going to go out in groups so that we can just protect each other, because they knew that if they go out alone, of course, the risk that they are going to face is higher. So MP started to ask questions like, okay, so do you think if an international person goes with you out there to the bush, because he was playing bush, do you think the soldier is going to attack you? So through a lot of talk, so these women said, look, if there are international people in this organization, we would like them to go with us out to the bush, and we are sure that we are not going to be attacked. So of course, after a lot of internal discussion and, well, preparation for that, MP started to do that. So every morning, some two or three international staff went out together with these women to the bush, providing what we call protective accompaniment. And after doing that, and after questioning different sites, these women were not attacked anymore. So the presence of having this international person out there with women was a way of preventing further violence against these women. So activities like this one, I mean, this example is very concrete, but it shows, illustrates some of the strategies that MP does in the field to protect civilians in what we call active armed conflict.
Just to adding up what Marta was saying, because it's not just our presence, but it's also building relationships with the local commanders, for example, both from the government and the opposition, you know, I mean, trying to raise awareness about the issues that these women were facing. And also we realized that during the afternoon is much more risky because the soldiers are drunk, you know, so is it better if you just go during the morning, you know, and don't go by yourself, you know? I mean, a group of 50 women would be less vulnerable to those attacks. Then, so it's a set of strategies that we try to develop together with the people of the community to try to mitigate the risk of attack, you know? So, yeah.
Let's talk just a little bit about, you've come to Bismarck partly because of the movement, the water protecting movement, the anti-DAPL group. There was a lot of conflict, including police brutality and attacking, and a lot of hostility. Can you tell us kind of just a little bit, you come into this situation, what are you trying to do? Can you explain that a little bit? And then we'll talk a little bit about your plans for like tonight and next week. But give us some idea, now that you're with us, how would you do this?
Okay, so we've been here a month already, and then during this time we've been talking to different people, different actors, right? So what we've seen so far is that the community in general is very concerned about what is happening, okay? There is a lot of concern because even after this problem ends, so people will have to be living together, okay? Sharing as a community. So we noticed that this concern is there. And we talked to different leaders, people who have this potential to take nonviolent actions to prevent escalations of violence. So the resources are here, the capacity is here, the willingness is here. So what we are trying to do is just to bring these key people together for them to do some brainstorming on concrete strategies that could help the community as a whole to overcome this problem, to overcome the division and the polarization that the community is facing.
I would say that the three core principles of nonviolent peace force, the first, I mean, it's nonviolence. The second one is local ownership, the primacy of local actors. And the third one is no partisanship. No, so, I mean, we are completely no partisan. Of course, we are not no partisan. We are talking about human rights discourse and violence, you know, but we don't take any side in the conflict in order for us to have an open channel with both sides, you know. So we've been talking to both sides in the conflict and trying to serve as this bridge, you know. So, I mean, one of the things we are doing, and we're having today our first training, it wasn't an open invitation because what we've done, we just spoken to some leaders of the community, religious leaders, community leaders, you know, so they can select people from the community who would be able and willing to learn some skills, and we were able to share some knowledge about how to deal with conflict in a nonviolent way. You know, so we are having today the first training, and as I said, we're going to be staying here until the end of March, and hopefully we will be able to support a network of people just to foment dialogue in the community.
So they're doing this training. They've met a lot of different people here. Some of you might be interested in the Nonviolent Peace Force. You can go to their website, nonviolentpeaceforce.org, to learn more about how these people do this kind of thing. You heard Marta tell the story about Southern Sudan, a place with a lot of conflict, war, soldiers on both sides, women needing to get down to the river to get water or get wood, and they're being attacked, and you were actually there, I think, which both of you, Tiago and Marta, would go down with them to this place, and the women were less likely to be attacked because those two were there. Not because you're so powerful, but because you were from someplace else. And people say, oh my goodness, well, we're not going to attack them as long as these people from around the world are here. I think at this point, let's say give them a thank you for being here. I'm glad that you got a chance to meet them and them for them to meet you, so that in the future they might come out here and visit and talk some more about this kind of thing, but at least now you know who they are, and I think we have a special gift for them, don't we? So I'm going to turn this over to Anne-Jeanette Parisien.
May I have the members of the Diversity Committee join me in the front, please? As a tradition across many tribal nations on this continent, we would like to honor you with a gift. Thank you for your time and your willingness to come and share with us and share this day with us. And not to forget our assistant, Dr. Palachek, will you come to the podium, please? We don't have any money for you, but we have this lovely mug.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that historical presentation.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions or comments for either Dr. Palachek or for our honored guests this afternoon? I think they will be here for a few moments. If you'd like to come down and visit with them one-on-one, and you won't have to ask everybody, like in front of everybody. Thank you very much to the teachers and staff of Theodore Jamerson Elementary, and also for your students for joining us here today and celebrating with us. So that concludes our formal presentation. Thank you again for joining us and have a great day.
Tiago and Marta's organization, called Nonviolent Peace Force, has headquarters in Brussels and an office in Minneapolis. Field teams are presently deployed in the Philippines, Sudan, the Middle East, and in Bismarck, North Dakota. Find out more on their website at nonviolentpeaceforce.org. The Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was enacted into North Dakota state law in 1991. This program was produced by United Tribes Technical College, Office of Public Information. Dennis Newman, director, Alicia Heglin-Thorpe, producer. This series is designed not only to strengthen our communities, but to give insight and understanding of a tribal culture and a Native people. For more information, visit our website, uttc.edu.